the theme for the retreat, or the five faculties, the five qualities, capacities we have inside that really dictate how we do what we do. And these five qualities or faculties that we have are understood to be treasures or something divine or something very special that we have. And normally I think that when we think about ourselves, you know, I suppose some people identify some of these qualities as being core parts of who they are, and they appreciate them, their faith, or they appreciate their wisdom or something. But most of us probably don't appreciate all five very much. And they're important part of Buddhist teachings, not because they're doctrines of Buddhism, but rather Buddhism has a lot to do with action, with what we do, much more so than what we believe. And these five faculties, five qualities, are qualities that support what it is that we're doing, no matter what we're doing. If you're cooking breakfast for yourself, it helps if you have some faith or confidence you can do it. You have to put some effort into it. It's not, you know, otherwise it's wishful thinking. Sitting there just look at the refrigerator. And you have to bring some attention to what you're doing. You know, you can't just, you know, if you're pouring milk into your cereal, you have to pay a little bit of attention, because otherwise it'll go all over the table. And it helps to be concentrated. And in certain activities, if you're trying to really carefully, you know, slice your mango or your fruit, you know, you better be careful how you do it. And then you should be discerning or wise about how much you eat, what you eat, how you cook it, how you take care of it. There's all kinds of wisdom that comes around cooking food. And so when you have all those things in place, then it all goes very smoothly. And maybe it so feels almost like second nature and never occurs to you that you have five faculties operating right there and then. If you ride a bicycle, the five faculties are in play. You can do the exercise and see on just, I think, every endeavor the person engages in, these five things come into play or are absent in some way or other. And when they're absent, we trip ourselves up. Absence is things that often don't go so well. If the person lacks confidence in what they're doing, occasionally it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I can't do it. Well, then it turns out that you can't. And sometimes, and certainly sometimes some difficult things, you need the confidence to get a certain kind of, you know, momentum going. One of the first people who commented on this was a very famous American philosopher of religion named William James. I don't know if he was the first, but he said that's very eloquently. And he noticed that how important faith is. And he said that, he claimed that if there's a big crevasse of a few feet wide and you have to jump over it, that the person with confidence they're going to jump over it is more likely to succeed than the person who doesn't. So, you know, maybe you have to imagine that it's a doable thing, but the lack of confidence, sometimes we don't give ourselves fully into the job enough, or we hold back, or we somehow, you know, it doesn't work quite as well. So sometimes this lack of them that just really gets an issue in our lives. And cultivating and developing confidence or effort or mindfulness or concentration or wisdom is kind of part of the game to become skilled and capable at the different things we're doing. And so this applies equally to doing Buddhist practice. In fact, these common elements of everything we do is not a belief that you have to believe in. It's not asking for, it's not a doctrine of Buddhism. It's just pointing out that these are five faculties that we have, and that they're useful to pay attention to, because their presence or their absence will have an influence on the activity of Buddhist practice. And while here in this retreat, sitting quietly and doing walking, for some of us, from some points of view, you're doing nothing. But you are doing something. You're sitting quietly. You're sitting quietly and engaging your capacity for attention to see more clearly than you normally would what is happening here and now. And to do so is a phenomenal activity. I like to think of it as an activity of meeting ourselves. That it's all too easy in our life to be alienated from ourselves, not really be in touch. Some people are just so busy, important things to do, work and school and activities to do and children and parents to take care of or whatever it might be. It just, you know, it's easy to get pulled into that whirl of kind of activity and lose touch with oneself. People have dispositions, personalities that somehow they're more interested in, you know, anything but themselves. There are some people for whom being in touch with themselves is actually very painful and very difficult. The emotions are difficult. The memories that are buried in there are difficult. The wounds that we've had are difficult. And so people, reasonably so, because nothing else makes, you know, doesn't make sense, the person doesn't know how to be present for these difficulties, then they, you know, go and do something else. They engage and ignore it or avoid it or shut off from it. And so it's a way of not meeting ourselves. And here, we're sitting quietly, and one thing we're doing is to meet ourselves in a very deep way. To meet ourselves as a friend to ourselves, to meet ourselves as our own host, as our own guest, to meet ourselves as our trusted partner, or willing to become partners, willing to become friends, willing to get to know each other, you and yourself. Imagine that. And it isn't that you have to kind of introduce yourself to yourself, or it isn't that you have to go through your vital statistics so that you get to know each other. It's really a question of listening deeply, looking deeply, showing up and being really here carefully and present, and start noticing what is here, what is here, what is here, what's going on here, and then listening or sensing, feeling, paying attention to what's here. And then practices like focusing on the breathing is an aid for that, because to be able to really be present for what's here, the mind has to be trained to be able to be here, to be present, to be somewhat concentrated in the present moment, somehow settled here. And then what's here can begin revealing itself to us. And as it reveals itself to us, then we can figure out how we meet it further, and how we meet it further. And it's kind of like we go through layers. And it's not uncommon that early in practice, a lot of those layers can be very much connected to the story of our life. And so not uncommon for people to have to have a lot of review, a lot of memories come up from far in the past or in the present, recently. So things that are important, things came up. And so, you know, sometimes it's quite intense, the recent events. And so that's what's kind of, we're meeting. But then we ask ourselves, what does it mean to attend to these things? What does it mean to meet ourselves and be with ourselves? And what's the best way to do that? And is it worthwhile to do it? And shouldn't I be fixing it? Shouldn't I be analyzing it? Shouldn't I be changing what it is? Shouldn't I be making myself feel a different way and not feel the way I am? And the teachings of this practice here is you actually don't do much, but you pay careful attention. You keep coming close to what's happening, keep being present, seeing it and knowing it. So in some ways, the practice is not asking for a lot, but it's, you know, it's pretty phenomenal thing to do, to just be present. In some ways, they say it goes against the stream, against the current. It goes against how popular society often is, to stop and take a really good look. I've known people who've said that people who do what we do are selfish because they don't realize it's actually the antidote to selfishness, because you can't be selfish if you really look deeply and see what's going on here. It's just, you can feel the pain of that. And so the five faculties are, you know, what the qualities that support that meeting and support that meeting. And from the Buddhism, for the purpose of that meeting, we're not only here to meet ourselves deeply and see what's here, but we're here to see what's happening in a clear, honest, fully embodied way, so we could get to the other side of suffering. So we see our suffering, see it more intimately than you probably ever care to see it in a way that is in a very different framework, in a very different orientation. And we get to see something about our suffering, something about how we hurt, something about the stresses and tensions that we live with that you would never even imagine you had if you just lived kind of oblivious and then put your faith in Netflix. And so you see, you know, you're kind of, and then there's a path to go through that to come to the other side and to have an experience of what it's like to really have put down the incessant churning and circling and grinding of the mind that represents the stresses of the mind, the heart, the suffering we're under, the distress, the tension we live under, and to have an experience of all that's ceasing, stopping. The peace, the ease, the well-being that comes when the grinding and churning of the mind has finally stopped. The grasping and the clinging and the pushing away and the running away and the attacking and the blaming and the being scared and being greedy and all these things that the mind does, so that the mind or the heart, as Don said, can be at rest in itself, be at home in itself. To feel content in itself, not feel like it's inadequate or feel like it has to always get something to be satisfied or needs to prove itself or apologize for itself or hide itself because it's inadequate, but just to be able to be there. And one of the languages we use in Buddhism is be there and be free. So the five faculties come into play with this. Every moment of mindfulness, every moment of attention, these faculties are in some way there, whether it's known or not known, they're there in some degree or not there to some degree. Do you have faith or confidence in the mindfulness you bring? Do you have confidence or faith in bringing your attention to your breathing? Or do you have more confidence in being anxious? Do you have more confidence in planning? You know, I used to do that. You know, I would come to retreat. It was important to come to retreat. I was looking forward to coming to retreat. It was the most important thing to do to come to retreat. And so I'd finally kind of, you know, a lot of effort, I'd come to the retreat. And I was at the retreat where I could do the practice that was so important for me. And I'd be there planning the next retreat. You know, so the danger was I was going to miss the retreat because I was planning the next retreat. It's, you know, amazing what the mind does. Or, you know, I've sat on retreat and started to have projects of all kinds, you know. And then there's sexual fantasies, you know. So, you know, I mean, what are you going to hold? What's more important, mindfulness or your fantasies? You know, and so then you have to kind of decide and kind of, you know. And so if you have more faith in certain fantasies, and then, of course, you know, your mind's going to go off in that. And most people won't admit that, or even to themselves, even know to themselves that they have faith and confidence in the value of sexual fantasies when they're sitting on retreat. But, you know, logically, that's, you know, you don't believe that, but something in you must believe it. Otherwise, why do you do it? Or whatever it is your thing is, right? And so it's a big deal to actually learn or discover or apply our faith, our confidence in the mindfulness, to channel it into that, so it really supports us, to what we're doing here. Same thing with energy, same thing with mindfulness, to really bring it in. Some people have a lot of faith, but they also have fear, and so they come to sit down to practice, and they're here to practice, but oh, wait a minute, I'm not sure about this. I have to meet myself. I mean, you know, if I just show up, if I stop kind of thinking about things, I'm going to have an upwelling of my grief. I'm not sure that's going to work. And so the effort to be present is really not there. It's almost an effort to avoid that can exist. And I don't say this to, you know, to be at all disrespectful. I mean, the forces inside of us are quite, you know, everything should be respected. And, or the mindfulness, you know, then we think we're being mindful, but we don't know what it is. Or we think we're being mindful. And there was a time when I was deep in my practice that I thought I was being mindful, but I'd confused mindfulness and concentration. And so I got kind of, you know, confused and actually got kind of wonky for me. And anyway, so these things come to come in. And then, and they come. How the five faculties come and get engaged is particularly important when the practice gets difficult. And that's a time to kind of, you know, to kind of refine yourself, fine tune. Where is my faith and confidence? What's the energy I'm using here? Is it a useful energy? Is it a useful effort here? What I'm doing? Am I practicing mindfulness, or am I practicing? Am I practicing criticizing myself or something else? The ability to slide between being mindful and being self-conscious is really easy to do, to slide between them, because mindfulness gives you the information with which you can become self-conscious and self-critical. And so you have to be very careful. So is this mindfulness, or am I kind of just berating myself because I see something that I don't like? Or mindfulness is very generous, very kind. It doesn't really need you to be anything different. And then concentration. Am I really here to really steady myself? To be steady with this. Steady, steady, Gil. Just stay here, be steady. And then am I being wise? Am I being discerning? Am I able to differentiate and seeing the other four faculties? Can I see, am I really mindful here or not? Am I really applying my effort, or am I kind of thinking, well, the next sitting I'm going to apply myself? You know, but, you know, I applied myself pretty well last sitting. I deserve a break. People come and tell me that sometimes. You know, I worked really hard yesterday, and so today I just kind of flipped myself. I deserved some good fantasies. So who am I to say that they, you know, not sure they deserve it? Why not? The car salesman, I took a car, driving a car once, and the car salesman said, you deserve an air conditioner. And I thought, oh, really? It never occurred to me. So there, you know, these minds of ours, it's really what, you know, it does all these tricks and all these funny things. And so discernment, the wisdom part, is to kind of, what am I doing here? What's happening here? And not to analyze it, but to see clearly. You know, and one of the ways to be wise is to be wise about the other four faculties. So that makes it a little simpler, more immediate. So the topic of today is going to be faith, and faith. I've given many talks on faith, and one of the early things I'll say in these talks is that maybe faith is not a good translation, and certainly many people in the West some people love the term, some people have a history with religion or faiths that makes it a very problematic word. And, you know, if you bring it up, we're going to talk about faith and how important it is, some people are going to feel uncomfortable because of their history with the word. So there is an alternative word that I think in some ways actually works better for represent the Pali, the ancient Indian word, sada, Sanskrit, it's shraddha. And that's, I think, actually a more accurate word is probably confidence. But the but you know, and what, but then it's kind of like you're tricking yourself if you use that instead, because it's just Latin for the same thing. You know, it's you know, with confidence means in Latin. And but confidence, you know, feels a little bit more, you know, it's more, I don't know, it's more of a, maybe a, it doesn't necessarily require a belief in a creed, and which is part of the problem with the word faith. But I like the word faith because faith, for me, is a more heartfelt word. And whatever sada is, it involves the heart. And what's, you know, heartfelt, or, you know, where we, you know, where we put our hearts, the practice we put our hearts into, in a way that confidence doesn't quite have that emotional quality for me. So on one hand, I like confidence because it seems more accurate for the ancient tradition, but it's a heartfelt thing for them too. So then in English, we have faith. So I want to say something interesting about these words. If the word faith, the problem with word faith for some people, has to do with faith, you know what? And then it seems like you have to believe something that's not reasonable to believe. The word believe, you know what? You know, at the original meaning of the word believe was, it was to love, to care for, and to hold dear. That's what the original meaning was back in the Middle Ages, and because, you know, back then, if you, I mean, if, like, for example, believing in God. There was not a question whether in the Middle Ages in Europe whether you're going to believe in God or not. Everyone believed in God. That was just like what people did, and said, "You believe in God?" I mean, that's like, but rather, when you said you believe in God, do you love God? Do you care for God? Do you, are you, you know, is God dear for you? So the word believe has this feeling of what do you love? What do you care for? In its roots, in its historical roots, and I love that. And so if we take this word sada, the first of the five faculties, what do you know, what do you love here? What do you care about? Is there some love or care, or do you hold something dear when you do this practice? Do you hold yourself dear? Do you value yourself? Is this an act of caring for yourself that you're actually doing this practice? Do you dare? Do you dare to hold yourself dear? And then we have this problem that you're not supposed to be selfish, you're not supposed to be focused on yourself, and then even for Buddhists it gets more complicated because there's not supposed to be a self. And so then, you know, people then shortchange themselves and are not willing to appreciate themselves and value themselves. And but what would happen if you did this practice, if it was really explicitly for you, that you tapped into the deep inside of yourself wherever you can, and it became an expression of care, of love, and that it was an act of love? That's what faith is. And at your, it's a love of practicing, love of mindfulness, love of showing up, that you're caring for something very precious and important. And that's why you're here to do this. So I like, so that's like a quality of the heart. Then you do something wholeheartedly because you care for it. So what does it take to care for what you're doing in this practice? And I'm trying to suggest, say also that it's part of that, part of it is to care for yourself. To care for yourself enough to make a difference. Make a difference in freeing yourself from suffering and to cultivating and developing beautiful qualities of heart and mind. Now, the reason why confidence works as a better word is that the primary function of sada, the faith or confidence in the Buddha's teachings, is to get us started on the Buddhist path in practice. It's a kind of faith that allows you to start something that you don't know yet if it works for yourself. Because, you know, if you want to take a class at a local community college, you don't know whether that teacher is any good. You don't know if you're capable of learning whatever they have to teach. You don't even know, you know, you take it on faith that the community college has done their research and hired someone who's capable, and it's going to be worthwhile. You have to have some rudimentary faith like that to even sign up. You know, maybe you don't think that way, it's not done so consciously, but it's there. And a lot of activities, if you've never done it before, there has to be some faith that it's worthwhile that you can do it. And so that's really the primary, if you see, read the ancient texts, it's the primary quality that gets a person to start. Out of faith, out of sadha, a person then engages in the practice. The idea is that as a person practices, then it becomes a first-hand experience after a while. It's kind of like a trial and error. It's action reflection. You do something and you learn from that. But if you just sit and read a book about Buddhism and learn all the ideas, you don't have the first-hand experience that it works. The idea is to have first-hand experience. And to do that, you have to engage. And if you're going to engage and act, then the five faculties are relevant. As you engage and do the trial and error, give it a chance out of faith, because somehow or other you have a little seed of faith that this is worthwhile to try, then as with time, the idea that it gets, that faith gets transformed, that sadha gets transformed into something else. And that something else is called avecca pasada in Pali. You don't have to remember that. Some people translate it as verified faith. Some people say it's confidence born of knowledge. Because we know something for ourselves, now we have confidence of a different kind. Bhikkhu Bodhi translates it as unshakable confidence. But I really know. Like one of the things that I have unshakable confidence in is mindfulness. I've done this mindfulness practice so long and in so many different settings, so many different situations, and it seems like it always gets it right. It seems like if I'm mindful, somehow the situation unfolds, develops in ways that I never could have imagined. That this mindfulness really works. And I have first-hand knowledge of it. I know it. I've seen it so many times. So it's not an issue of faith or believing that mindfulness is a good idea. I have confirmed confidence. I have confidence based on knowledge. I have, you know, unshakable confidence in this mindfulness thing. But it came from doing it. If you don't do it, then, or you do it in a wonky way, then maybe you will never develop that. But, and then that really supports me. The Buddha said that faith is your partner, can become your partner. And I think what he means by that, it's your kind of, like a friend who comes along and supports you as you go along. It's a great support. And I feel that because there are times when I'm up against something that's difficult. Difficult internally or difficult externally. And then I remember, I have no doubts about this mindfulness. And I'm clear that I could show up for this event, whatever it needs. As long as I'm mindful or try to be mindful as best I can, somehow it'll work out okay. One way. And remembering that confidence really supports me in all kinds of settings. The Buddha said that if a person has faith, has a sadha, then they're not going to be overwhelmed by the five great fears. That apparently back in ancient India, they had five great fears. And I think they had, aren't there five fears in Western psychology too? I don't know what, anyway, the five fears in Buddhism are a fear that you'll lose your livelihood, your means of sustenance, fear of a disrepute, which in Gill's kind of life story means fear that people are not going to like me. That was a big thing for me. And then fear of groups of people. Sometimes it's said to be fear of speaking, public speaking. But maybe that's what it means. But the literal Pali is fear of being in groups. Some of that fear is good. And then there is a fear of dying. It's the fourth one, fear of death. And then the fifth one is fear of a bad rebirth, because because of what you did. And so whether we agree that these are the five great fears for you, or that's another question. But what was interesting and why I list them is the Buddha said that when you have strong faith or confidence, these fears are not going to get in your way. They're not going to stop you or interrupt you or keep you from kind of going ahead with what you need to do. So that's a powerful thing, to not have these great fears interfere with your life. The Buddha talked about faith being a seed. Again, these metaphors that he likes to use. And it's a seed that when it sprouts and grows, it's kind of that metaphor changes, it becomes a treasure that we have. And I think that's the biggest treasure when it becomes this avecchāpassādā, becomes this verified faith that has been born out of action. And the action is practicing, which is a very particular kind of action. Probably at least half of what we're doing, we practice mindfulness, sit and meditate, is the action we're doing is letting go of almost every other action. The mind wanders off in thought, so let go of that. That's an action, right? Come back. We have a strong impulse to get the 30-second tea of the day. I'm not going to do that. We have this, impulse to, start evaluating the moral stature of the color of people's socks. And the mind goes off and starts, analyzing the socks around this building. Not going to do that. We see that we're having how ridiculous it is. We're morally evaluating everyone's socks. And so then we berate ourselves. Oh, look at me. Here I am again doing something hopeless, and I'm hopeless. No, we don't do that. Stop that. There's all this, there's a lot of undoing that goes on in the practice. I don't need to do that. Don't need to do that. Don't need to do that. And if you can't just let it go, then you meet that. And how do you meet it? What happens if you meet it with faith in the value of meeting it with kind, open, allowing mindfulness? Just meeting it. Just it's enough just to meet it, to offer your presence to it. What is it if you meet it with an energy and effort which is not a whack-a-mole effort, or not, kind of bore into it, or not holding back and being hesitant, but really kind of showing up for it? Okay, here I am berating myself for thinking about people's socks. I shouldn't be doing that. I should know better. I'm a Dharma teacher after all. And so just meet that rather than, meet that berating. Oh, look at that. Here I am once again being self-critical. Let's just hold that. And the beautiful movement that for me, that kind of represents wonderful, the faith, the belief of caring for ourselves as we are present for all these difficulties that exist as we practice, is to take your hands and imagine that you're cupping your hands underneath whatever the challenge is, and just hold it in your cupped hands. Gil, your self-criticism and your anger at yourself, just let it be there. Don't make it go away. But just meet it and hold it like this. That's a beautiful image for me. Just let it be there. And that represents, that image represents kind of really what's at the heart, the essence of this practice, which is to matter-of-factly just see what's there without making anything a problem. Nothing needs to be a problem when you're doing this practice. It's just one more thing to meet and see clearly for what it is. And that's the mindfulness. See it clearly for what it is. And show up for it. Really be there. Be there and be present for it. So the showing up and being present is the effort. Seeing it clearly is the mindfulness. The image of cupping it with your hands is maybe help kind of gives a person a kind of feel for what that clear seeing is like. And then to hold yourself steady. Hold the mind steady. So don't be in a hurry to get through anything. Like so if you're staying with your breath, don't get in a hurry for the next breath. But can you hold your mind steady with the out-breath? So you're there with a whole out-breath. Can you hold your mind kind of a certain kind of soft, healthy stillness? Stay there. Can you study yourself a little bit with wisdom? And what am I doing here that's extra? What am I doing that's not needed right now? And to let go of that, let go of that. But as a topic for today is faith. There has to be faith. So even if you... So what is your faith? What is the confidence? What do you have trust in? What do you believe? What do you believe in terms of what do you love? And how do you meet to practice with your love and the care? And in having that faith, and one of the reasons to emphasize on the first day of a retreat like this, is that the strength of the faith, the more you channel and bring in your confidence and your trust and your faith that this is worthwhile, the more you'll kind of do it wholeheartedly, the more you'll give yourself over to it, the more your strength of your faith will protect you from all too casually wandering off into some fantasy or getting the 33rd tea of the day. You know, just, okay, no, I'm here to sit, I'm here to practice and really give myself over. This is what I came here to do. And then one of the classic objects of faith is the value, really having faith in the purpose of what we're doing here. That the purpose is to really start getting clarity, insight, deep insight in who we are, how we tick, what our suffering is, so that we can come to the other side of that. We can be free, we can suffer less and maybe suffer, be free of suffering entirely, that we can liberate the heart from all the shackles and all the ways in which it's oppressed or all the ways in which it has been limited or all the ways in which we keep it damped down or keep it hidden. It becomes free and open. So that the worth, the dignity, the divinity of who we are, the fullness, that we're allowed to kind of show up and be in such a full, complete, total, valued way. Because there's nothing that gets in the way of that. There's no conceit that gets in the way of that. There's no greed or hatred that gets in the way of that. And so we can just kind of, we're allowed to really breathe and be strong and be powerful and be a divinity or have the divine kind of course through us. The freedom that this letting go that happens in Buddhism is a phenomenally powerful, beautiful, and valuable thing to do. Our society desperately needs to understand what greed, hate, and delusion are about, and desperately needs people who have really come to terms with it and seen through to the other side of it and really learned how to be in the world without greed and without hate, without delusion, to live in the world with this open-hearted generosity, divine generosity, to be in the world with love, divine love, to be in the world with wisdom, this beautiful thing that flows out of us. The purpose is noble. The purpose is phenomenal. It's, you know, I can't underscore enough, emphasize enough for you how much value I put in this, you know, and what, you know, this is not, what we're doing here is not just a little bit of stress reduction. You know, this is a little bit higher, I mean, much higher purpose of what we're doing here. And so to have faith in that, this is not a spa. And I thought it was just a Buddhist spa, you know. They even provide lotion. Everywhere. So, but to say this, not as a big, like you should do this, or like, to kind of admonish anyone to practice seriously for this great goal, but really to open the doors of love and care and hold all this dear and just be delighted and that this is worthwhile, to have faith, this is good. There's a lot of epidemic for this. I think ever since the modern era began, whenever that was, began, of a sense of meaninglessness in this life. People do, you know, is there worth that meaning, the work they do? And what you're doing here is meaningful. This is, I believe, one of the most meaningful things you can do with your life. For this week, you are doing one of the great things of human life. Everyone should do this. This is like, you know, going to Mecca once a lifetime. And this is the thing. This is a wonderful thing to do. So I say all that to, you know, with the hope to really put some little bit of magnifying glass on the faith that you have, the confidence you have, and to whatever degree you have come here with faith and confidence in what you're doing. This is the time to call on it, to have it support you, be your partner, be your wealth, be your kind of what kind of carries you and engages you, and yes, so that when you're here, you kind of give a big yes. I'm here. Yes. This is what I'm doing. Yes. I'm doing it. The first of the five faculties. First of the five divinities. So, So I have one announcement, and then I thought we would switch back into the meditation mode, and we'll sit for a few minutes, just to kind of make a nice transition back into the retreat mode. And the announcement is, we've posted now downstairs on that, you know, big double doors going into the dining room, the sign-up sheet for practice discussion with Nisha, Don, and I, that will begin tomorrow. And we have two sheets of paper up, one for Monday and one for Tuesday, tomorrow and the next day. And there's an on both sheets of paper, there should be just enough slots for everyone to get one slot. So only sign up one slot over those 2 days. And then what will happen is that the next 2 days, there'll be a sign-up sheet, another set of sign-up sheets later. So you'll get a second sign up later, and there's a chance to meet you'll sign up with someone you didn't see before, and there'll be a chance to sign up, probably a chance for you to sign up for the person you didn't see if you want to see that person on the last day. And I say probably because there'll be some spots, but not enough for everyone. And so the sheet is down there. We ask that everyone sign up before 7:30 this evening, because we have some administrative things to do with that. We get organized. We look at your interview sheets you filled out and put them into little piles of who's seeing who, and so we have to have time to do all that. And then if someone doesn't, we have to find out if someone didn't sign up, and then we have to find them and let them know, you know, could you please sign up? So by 7:30, and only sign up for one. And sign up at a time that, you know, doesn't conflict with your work meditation. And we kind of like to see the people who are new to retreats the first day. So if that's okay with you, it's nice if you would sign up soon, fill in those spaces. Okay? So let's just sit quietly for a few moments.